is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, the morning after of the American election, returning Donald Trump to the White House, and in particular, what is to be done about Ukraine. The Biden policy has been encapsulated as long as it takes. We have a headline from Reuters this morning from Europe. Biden rushing assistance to Ukraine with aid uncertain under Trump. Subhead, the White House plans to send $9 billion in security assistance to Ukraine before President Joe Biden leaves office in January, according to sources, hoping to shore up the government in Kyiv before President-elect Donald Trump's inauguration. Anatole, a very good day to you. The election of Donald Trump was always possible. It was a binary choice, continuing the Biden administration's policies under Vice President Harris, and there was no Ukraine crisis in the first term, so there's no particular precedent here for how Mr. Trump thinks of Ukraine. Mr. Zelensky has congratulated Donald Trump and looks forward to working with him. Everything else is speculation, so let's turn to the remarks that Mr. Trump made during the campaign was something along the lines of, I can settle this in 24 hours. That's not very detailed. And in addition to the fact, it suggests that there is only talk that needs to be done. What is your measure about Ukraine now, caught between the two administrations, Mr. Biden rushing aid and Mr. Trump the unknown? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, Biden rushing aid, frankly, makes good sense because it will strengthen, you know, America's position at the negotiating table and Ukraine's position. You know, it will make clear to the Russians that the aid is guaranteed for some time to come, though not, of course, forever. A worry which has been expressed is that Biden might basically try preemptively to wreck a Trump peace initiative by, for example, giving a green light to the Ukrainians to fire American guided missiles into Russia. That would also be a crazy thing for the Ukrainians to do and for the British to go along with, because it would infuriate the Russians. It would really expose them to Russian retaliation, just at a point where, of course, they're completely unsure whether a Trump administration will go on supporting them. So I hope Biden doesn't do that, and I hope the Ukrainians and Brits don't press him to. I don't think they will. As far as Trump and a peace settlement is concerned, I think there will be an early push for a peace settlement in Ukraine. And of course, then it will be the usual question. It will be, how much the Russians will demand and what the Trump administration in the first instance is prepared to agree to. Ukraine will, of course, be deeply unhappy with any compromise peace. But if Trump is prepared to be ruthless enough, then he can force the Ukrainians to agree. But I don't think that a Trump administration would want, a peace that involves, real American humiliation and Ukrainian surrender. The other question is, of course, whether Trump will have a team both efficient and coherent and loyal enough, actually to pursue a diplomatic strategy in a competent way. Because, we remember that during the first Trump term, he made a big thing of trying for a peace settlement in North Korea, with North Korea, but there was no... there was absolutely no preparation. There was no thought behind it. And the whole thing rapidly collapsed. There's been a suggestion from the Trump team that, they could agree that Russia would continue to hold the occupied territories that it does hold now. And that in return, America would offer Ukraine NATO membership. But every Russian I talk to has said that that is not acceptable to Russia, that NATO membership has to be excluded. So if that's, an unbreakable American condition, you're simply not going to get a peace deal. The other question, of course, is what happens on the ground, I mean, above all, before Trump actually takes power, 2 months from now, a lot can happen in 2 months. There's a widespread expectation that the Russians will make a really determined effort to take a lot more territory before Trump comes in. But, of course, we don't know that, and we don't know that they will succeed. So, you know, a lot's up in the open. But I think what is certain is that we will see an attempt by a Trump administration at an early settlement.
We'll hear from the capitals quickly, summarizing. The Kremlin is reacting cautiously. Fine. Germany is, in these last hours, facing a snap election. I believe that would be the next step, because the coalition government has collapsed, with Mr. Scholz now setting his own course. That may be reaction to the American election, but it might be the accumulation of contradictions since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Paris, we've not heard from. London has those long-range missiles and its own problems. So I go quickly through to the European Union and or NATO, both here, watching the Donald Trump election. We don't have a particular response from all of them together, but Germany certainly indicates that things are not going to be the same. Is it in the interest of European Union for Mr. Trump to settle this as quickly as possible? Is the EU and or NATO going to stand right beside him and say yes? Or is there a reason to anticipate resistance in either of those quarters?
In the end, the Europeans will say yes. And I mean, the Poles and the Balts, especially the Balts, would be damn fools if they openly opposed a Trump administration, because, of course, the Balts are totally dependent on America for security protection. So, I mean, they would really risk leaving themselves completely isolated. And the question is, I mean, how much symbolic, at least, pushback will you see from the Europeans before, in the end, they agree to whatever America dictates? I mean, they always do agree in the end, but sometimes they, you know, try to spin things out a bit, partly in order to, you know, reduce their humiliation. But, I mean, it's very clear that the European political scene in many ways is coming apart. As you said, you know, the German coalition has just collapsed. If opinion polls are anything to go by, the coalition parties will be crushed in early elections. And then you'll have a Christian Democrat government, for sure. But the question is who they can make a coalition with. I would imagine that would probably be there'd be a grand coalition with the Social Democrats. But then, of course, you know, you've got basically the whole of the German mainstream parties together, which always strengthens the extremes. I mean, the most interesting possibility is that if, you know, Alternative for Deutschland, the far right populist party, really surges, it may not be possible to have a majority in the German parliament without this new alliance of Sarah Wagenknecht. Well, she has said that she will not enter any government that does not go for peace in Ukraine and oppose NATO membership for Ukraine. So everything's up in the air. The British government is in an extremely difficult position by having tried simultaneously, you know, to grovel to Trump while at the same time allowing, you know, Labour Party activists backed by the party, it seems, to go and campaign against Trump. So the British have an awful lot of groveling to do in Washington, but, you know, they're used to that.
To the Kremlin, then. The remarks from the Kremlin are puzzling. We react cautiously. Goes on to say that there are reasons to believe that Mr. Putin has looked forward to Mr. Trump's election. I hesitate at that because that would suit the political partisanship in the United States if that statement were absolutely proved. I just mentioned it anecdotally. Is there any substance to believe that Mr. Putin is more comfortable with Mr. Trump than he was with Mr. Biden or would be with Ms. Harris, or is Anatole Putin, Vladimir Putin, does he remain an unknown as far as his in his personal opinion of other world leaders?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that they are happier with Trump than they were with Biden or would have been with Harris. But they have no, they really don't know, it seems. Well, none of us do exactly what Trump is going to offer. They're also worried, you see, that Trump, they're worried about that North Korean scenario that I mentioned, that Trump possibly even, you know, ambushed into this by the US establishment, will make an offer that he genuinely thinks of as genuinely viable and generous, like this deal of territory for NATO. The Russians will turn it down, and Trump will then get angry, which he's good at, and kick over the table, and things will be even worse than they were before. So there are a lot of Russian worries about this. I mean, the point being that there are things, I am told, though not, of course, by Putin, that the Russians are prepared to negotiate down, not completely away, but down. You know, this denazification business, demilitarization, they can be, you know, greatly reduced. The two things that they're not prepared to negotiate are giving up territory that they already hold in these four provinces that they've annexed, and neutrality, no NATO membership. I mean, I was told by everybody that these are non-negotiables as far as Putin is concerned. Well, you know, the way that these negotiations work, if they do work, is that you begin with a back channel so that the, you know, the Trump government can hear this and, you know, find out what it's dealing with from the Russians and decide just what, in fact, it can offer. But this, you know, this requires careful diplomacy. I mean, if Trump had any sense, he would appoint William Burns. He'd move him from CIA to the State Department and task him with this as Secretary of State. Because, you know, Burns is a professional and very skilled diplomat. But there aren't many people I know in Washington who think that that's likely.
I'm speaking with Anatole Lieven of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. The day after with Ukraine and the Trump administration 74 days away, there are other difficulties. We're going to turn to one immediately in Georgia and the Black Sea Basin because of protests to the election and also to the future of Georgia. NATO or not, EU or not, Russia or not. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.